The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With your host, Andrew Donaldson, this is Heard Tell.
Welcome back to Heard Tell. Thank you so much for giving us the most precious thing you have, your time, as we continue to do what we always do, turn down the noise of the news cycle when it comes to culture and politics, get to the information we need to properly discern the times we live in. Okay, the presidential race is set. Vice President Harris has announced Minnesota Governor Tim Walz is her running mate. Let's talk about it. Now, the first rule of VP selection, we talked about this with the J.D. Vance stuff. Traditionally, what you want to do is, people talk about balancing the ticket and all that, but really the first rule is do no harm. VP picks don't really help any. There's almost no evidence that they help swing voters, they help move anything, but a bad one could do harm. So the first rule is do no harm. In a presidential election that has gone completely chaotic since President Biden stepped down, this is very much a very safe pick. This is a very traditional pick, notwithstanding how crazy the last few weeks have been in this race. He's Midwestern, upper Midwest in Minnesota. Kamala Harris, of course, is from the California Democratic machine. She's very much a product of that upbringing. He's upper Midwest. He's Minnesota. Minnesota, nice. Some people will vote. He knows how to throw elbows and bars, but he also knows how to couch that in some jokes and folksyisms that play well on TV. He has executive experience, whereas as a governor, whereas Kamala Harris came up through the prosecutor ranks. She was a DA, and then she was a U.S. senator before becoming vice president. And vice presidents don't have any executive experience because they don't have any calls, because their first rule is do no harm to the president, which means you can't actually be in charge of anything because you don't want any credit and you don't want any blame. So it's a very traditional balance the ticket piece. Now, some people go like, well, she went old white guy. He's actually only 6 months older than Kamala Harris. You're talking an October and April birthday difference. So even though he looks older, hey, teaching in school will do that to you. Ask my parents. Look, this is a very traditional ticket. This is, you know, two basically 60-year-olds, although Kamala Harris is currently 59. They're the same age, they're the same generation, they come from two different parts of the country. They're ideologically going to be very, very aligned, although they come at it from two different points of view, because Minnesota progressivism has a long history in this country. You can go back, Wellstone, just keep on going back. The upper Midwest has a real progressive left of center streak to it, and he's very emblematic of that. Pragmatic progressivism, being able to win in rural and leaning areas, although Minnesota has not been competitive on a national level for the Republican Party. He does come from a Republican-leaning rural district originally, so he knows how to run those races. That's one of the weaknesses in Kamala Harris's game. That's one of the reasons these people coming out of California, they haven't really had to have contested elections. He had to win over moderates or win over Republican voters. So all this is a balanced ticket. Amazingly enough, it's a very traditional ticket if you think about it. Kamala Harris inherited Joe Biden's campaign, but when she ran her own campaign, she had a lot of the old Clinton people backing her, the campaign in 2019, 2020 that didn't go very far. A lot of people will immediately try to compare this to Hillary Clinton picking Tim Kaine. And a lot of comparisons are going to be made to the Hillary Clinton campaign because it's against Donald Trump. It's another woman at the top of the ticket. Go right on down the list. But I don't think the comparisons hold. Let's go through a few of them. And the Tim Walz piece of this really reflects that. The electoral map is very different. Tim Kaine, of course, was from Virginia. So they were looking at, you know, is Virginia competitive? I don't think Virginia is going to be particularly competitive this cycle. We will see. They may be able to clip it if some things go their way. But we'll see how Virginia does. But this tells you where they're looking at. They're not looking at the South. They would have went with a, you know, a Brashear out of Kentucky or something like that. Outside of the state of Georgia, and maybe a very slim outside chance of looking at North Carolina, the South is not competitive for a Democratic presidential nominee right now. Georgia is because of a lot of mitigating factors. You have Atlanta, which is a dynamic, fast-growing, huge, massive political force. You also have the fact that Trump is, again, just in the last few days, running his mouth about Raffensperger and the 2020 recalls and the 2020 election and the mess that made. That seems like really bad strategy. So Georgia is very much in play. North Carolina could be on an outside, but it's probably not. Trump's probably going to win it, although it's probably going to be closer than people think. I think Mark Robinson's going to drag that ticket more than people think in his race for governor, because he has some really ugly stuff in his past. And now he's also got a financial scandal involving his wife's foundation wife's nonprofit, I should say. So, but the South has pretty much gone to Democrat presidential candidates right now. The upper Midwest is very much in play. Michigan, Wisconsin, Minnesota hasn't voted for a Republican in quite some time, with a few exceptions. So it's not his state immediately, but the political common thought will be he can talk to Michigan voters. He can talk to Wisconsin voters. He can talk to people in the old Rust Belt up through there, and they can run up some votes and some margins, even in states they're not going to win. It gives you an idea where they're going to go. We also talked about when the J.D. Vance pick happened, and it's true here. The vice presidential pick is a demonstration of factional power within a party. How much power does the candidate have? How much party power does the party have? What factions inside the party get to make that call? Because there's a lot of politics to go into a VP selection. So what does this selection of Tim Walz tell us about the current status of Kamala Harris in the Democratic Party? Well, it tells us a couple of things. I think if she had her druthers, she probably would have gotten Kelly. They have a long relationship. It would have been really bad strategy for the Democratic Party to pull Mark Kelly out of Arizona. That's as close to an automatic win in a purple state as you're going to get. He could hold that seat forever. He is an absolute ATM machine for the Senate Democrats in fundraising things. And when you look ahead to what's probably going to be a minority Democratic Party in the Senate for the next few years, and probably for the next two cycles when you look geographically before they have a chance to flip the Senate back, they're going to really need Mark Kelly in the Senate. I wouldn't have done that either. A lot of people were pushing Shapiro in Pennsylvania, the governor of Pennsylvania. He is a political talent. He's a rising star. He has some stuff in his background that could have been problematic, and they want a zero distraction election so that they can keep everything. But he's only been governor for 1 year. I don't know that you want to burn a rising star on a, and let's be fair here, you know, the Harris campaign is still behind the Donald Trump campaign. I know the enthusiasm gap is closed. I know it's better, but remember, that's coming from the absolute hopelessness that the Joe Biden campaign was looking at. So you got to grade that on a curve. The Harris campaign has gotten back to level where this race should have been if Joe Biden's health and mental acuity hadn't fallen off a cliff and the debate stuff not happened. So keep that in mind. This is still going to be a hard race to win. Donald Trump is still probably favored to win it. I don't know if you burn Shapiro on this particular race when he's so young. He's only been in office for a year. You would have had to go right back into more special elections in a contested state of Pennsylvania. Strategy-wise, I wouldn't have picked him either, although a lot of people online were yelling at him. He's undoubtedly got political talent. His day will come. This was the safe pick. Now, I know online a lot of people were also calling for Pete. We talked about it with Eric Garcia about 2 weeks ago. If you want to go back and listen to that podcast, Herd Tell Show on all the platforms and herdtell.substack.com, you can catch that if you missed it. There's an argument to be made, and I made it about half jokingly, but there's a thought to it of, well, you put Pete on the ticket and you just go all out generational change and that's it. Just generational change. Nothing else matters. Contrast Trump's age, put the young guy that's really good on TV. Yeah, that's a good media strategy, but you have to contrast. Media strategy does not mean electoral coalition. Pete doesn't really do anything for an electoral coalition. Walz does. He brings the party completely together. He can reach out to moderates. He can reach out to moderate parts of the party. He knows how to talk to people in a plain language. I was joking about it as I wrote about it in Ordinary Times. You know, when you have, you know, when he sits across the table or in a podium, however they format these things, for some reason, they usually do the vice presidential debates. They have him sitting at a table. I actually kind of like that. They've done that a couple times. By the very famous Biden one, when he was vice president, they were sitting across the table from each other. But here's the thing with this. When you set him across from a J.D. Vance, you're going to get that contrast because J.D. Vance talks in tech bro, very brash, harsh MAGA-isms. And Tim Walz knows how to throw elbows. He knows how to attack. He knows how to be political. But he knows how to package that in some folksy and smile when he does it. It's a lot more Prairie Home Companion. And that kind of contrasts against that brash MAGA, you know, all this weirdness that's been kicking around. Everybody's been talking about that came from Walz. That was a media hit he did. He's good on TV. He's comfortable on TV. And when you're trying to build an electoral coalition to win, and the Democratic Party is going to have to get moderates. They're going to have to get independents. They're going to have to get non-Trump Republicans, what few of those remain. He's the kind of voice that does that. Folksy. He can be pragmatic in his progressivism. He's not afraid to moderate it a little bit, which makes the online people very mad. But the online people only get one vote in real life, so you got to kind of balance that out. Kamala, if you go back to 2019, remember, we still haven't really heard her talk. We've heard her give a campaign speech and that sort of thing, but we haven't heard her really been pressed yet. We haven't heard her take a hard press conference. We haven't seen her in a debate yet. That's going to decide this election, not the VP pick. But underneath that, let's go back to what we started with, is do no harm. And Tim Walz does no harm. He might even do a little bit of help. If you're going to contrast the Trump-Vance ticket, he has the optics, the personality, the cadence, the way to speak, and the background of executive experience where he can contrast that. But very few voters are going to vote for Tim Walz. This is still going to be a Kamala Harris versus Donald Trump election. It's going to be how many voters are tired of Donald Trump and how many people want to give Kamala Harris a shot when she has doesn't have a record of doing anything, even though she's a VP. She has to be careful trying to take too much of the Biden stuff because you start bringing up the negatives. And then the fact that she hasn't had a single national vote cast for her yet, although the Democratic National Convention has selected her. There's a lot of what ifs. This did no harm, probably did little help. It'll make the online progressive wing really mad because they didn't get what they want, but they never get what they want. They will be fine. This was fine. I know fine is a boring word in politics, but fine wins a lot of elections. Boring wins a lot of elections. Can Kamala Harris and Tim Walz win this election? They can. I still think they're a little behind. I think they got some work to do. And I'll repeat what I've said before. This was the missing piece to this race. Now we'll go through the DNC and the Democratic ticket. We'll get a little bit of a bump out of that. And then about a week after this, we'll look at the polls and see where we're at. And then the real race will start and we'll know where we're at. But all the players are on the board now, so we can stop speculating. The VP stakes are over. Tim Walz is the nominee for vice president for the Democratic Party. Harris Walz going forward. I don't think the comps to Hillary and Tim Kaine fit perfectly because they're very different people, and it's a very different electoral map. And that's where we are, and we'll see where we go going forward. Again, I'm just going to reiterate this and repeat it because it's very important. Everybody's been riding really, really high on Team Blue and the anti-Trump moderates. They're very excited right now. But grade that on a curve. You went from no hope to hope. That's the excitement level. Her polling numbers have come up. She's even got some polling that shows her favorability has ticked up a little bit. About another 2 weeks, we'll know where this race is really at. Don't look at that national number. Those battleground states, we just talked about them, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those kind of places are where this thing's going to be won and lost. Will Tim Walz play well there? Yeah, he will. Is that going to win you an election in and of itself? No, it won't. Still going to be Harris v. Trump, but this didn't do any harm, and it was a good, solid pick. It was a traditional pick. It was a very boring pick, but maybe that's what you need to go against a Donald Trump. More Herd Tell right after this.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.
American Giant makes great clothing, t-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Okay, everybody panicked
where the financial markets. I went on social media and
said, folks, calm down. This is not that big of a deal unless this goes for 3 or 4 days. And it was all based a lot of the stuff that came out of Asia, especially the Japanese market. There was bad tech news, things like that. And that Japanese market that had its worst day in recent memory got almost all the gains back the very next day. You should make a habit of marking fear mongers. What do I mean by fear mongers? People who do nothing but stoke your fears. Social media accounts, news outlets, talk radio hosts, people that have podcasts and platforms and content creators. If all they ever do is stoke you into a panic, it's time to just unfollow those people. Here's the thing. Panic's good for engagement. Right now, we got a hurricane rolling around the southeast that's going to pull up and park and dump a bunch of rain. Hurricanes are huge ratings. They're big deals because people are scared of them. People are worried. People need not want information. They need information. And they do to be safe, to keep their family safe, keep their property safe, to know what to do. Hurricanes are a big deal. That's why we started naming winter storms and thunderstorms and everything's got a name now, because if it's got a name, we can trend it better. We can have better ratings. Fear, 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 fear. Fear sells, okay? If it bleeds, it leads, but fear really sells ratings. People will pitch you fear. So when something like an economic hiccup, correction, whatever this turns out to be in the stock market fell 1,000 points. This is a crash. No, it wasn't a crash. No one crashed. Trump came out. Stock market is crashing because of politics. No, it's not. No one. Remember, the stock market is the highest it has ever been. Even after Monday, it is still up on the year by several percentage points. If this doesn't happen again, by about the 1st of October, all those gains will be back in the market. Now, we may have another market crash. We may have a full, we're overdue for a correction, which this wasn't even technically a correction. This would have to be done. Don't look at those points, 1,000 points. That don't mean anything. Stock market-wise, look at the percentage. When you had like the stock market crash that triggered the depression, and by the way, the stock market actually recovered by the time the depression kicked in. All the policies they overreacted to made it way worse. That's another story for another day. But when the stock market crashed back then, it was something like 22% of the market lost its value, percentage-wise, not points-wise. The market is so historically high right now that you got to go off the percentages to really get a fair comparison. But even if it lost 2-3 times what it lost, you'd still be up way higher than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago. Your 401k is okay. Just calm down. the thing about your 401k is you can't withdraw in it anyway unless you're a total fool and want to take a massive hit on it. So you're not going to touch it for 5, 10, 15, 20 years anyway. So why are you panicking over today? Why do you let the media and the news media and social media get you into a frenzy over something like that for the sole purpose of them getting your eyeballs and full attention? One of the great rules in life, and it applies to politics and it applies to culture, and it certainly applies to media, is that when everybody's panicking and everybody gets loud, it's time for you to get calm and quiet. Because as you get calm and quiet, you're not participating in the noise. You can start to see the noise around you. If the herd's all running one way, you need to stop and look the way they're running from and see if there's actually anything to be running from. Politics has a lot of fear baked into it. Politics has a lot of your dreams are going to be crushed. Your children will be scattered to the ends of the earth. Your house will be burned down, blah, 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 blah. The strongest possible language. Because when you're fearful and when you don't know what's going on, you are vulnerable, at least emotionally, if not things like the hurricane we just talked about, physically vulnerable. You're probably financially vulnerable. When you're vulnerable, it makes a predilection for you to make bad decisions. And one of the reasons when we open the show, I say discern the times we live in, is because when those moments come is when your discernment has to be at its maximum because you are vulnerable. It's almost an integrity issue. Can you keep your bearing? Can you keep your mind when everything around you is going crazy so that you make good decisions to get out of that situation and weather that storm? You know why they yell at you in basic training? If you've never been in the military, you've seen, you know, Full Metal Jacket or something. You've seen something from basic training. First thing they do, they jump on the bus, start yelling at you. Why do they yell at you constantly in basic training? Stress management. It's can you pick out of the noise of this large person screaming right in your face? Can you learn to deal with the noise and the force and the intimidation of it? And then by week 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 of training, you don't hear the screaming anymore. You just hear the instructions and the words inside of the screaming. You can pick it out. You can discern it and you can go act upon it. And it doesn't bother you anymore. You grow a callus to it. You grow a filter to it. So by the time that, you know, Staff Sergeant Perez is chewing you out, you know, during your last week, you're just like, you know, yes, Sergeant. And you're not really worried about it anymore because you know he's going to stop in a minute and then you can get on about your day. But when you first get off the bus, it's just like, oh my God, why is this person yelling at me? It's a developed trait. Unless you're me. I started giggling and wound up doing push-ups on the bus. I didn't even get off the bus before I got in trouble. I was doing push-ups in the aisle of the bus. That's another story for another day. Then Staff Sergeant Perez, my, you know, instructor, came up and he said something to me, and that was the end of giggling for about, you know, the entirety of my term there. Good guy. Stress management is the same with the media. It's always yelling at you. Learn to discern the noise out of the yelling. Learn to know what is noise and what is information. It's the core principle of what we do with this, you know, show we do and the podcast and all that. And I try to do it on my media hits. Everybody can yell. Anybody can make loud honking mouth noises. Are you saying something that matters? Are you cutting through the noise? When it comes to things like the financial markets, and our country has financial things. That's why we just did a whole hour on economics with Stephen Poppick. Go listen to that program. Inflation, recession, national debt, personal debt, walk through all of it, SAM rule, all that stuff. We spent a whole hour talking about it and didn't even scratch the surface because you could talk for days and days about it. That's why we don't just talk about politics. We bring in congressional reporters. We talk to reporters on the ground. We talk to people who talk to the lawmakers. Turn down the noise, and especially when it comes to the financial markets, because you don't want to make a bad decision about your house or your investments or your futures if you don't have to. Keep your head, folks. Keep your bearing. More Herd Tell right after this.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Welcome back to Herd Tell. Look, there's no way to say this without some people getting mad at me. I try to respect everybody's electoral opinion. You vote for who you want to. You have that ability and right as an American citizen to vote for whoever you want to. You can even write in other names. I've wrote in names. I've wrote in my dad's name sometimes as a protest vote. You have a right. Forget all this, you know, people prattling on about, you know, you have to vote this way. Listen, that's your vote. You do with what you have to. You are putting your name on something. If you want to vote, not vote, whatever. Now, don't just not show up to vote. That's not what I'm saying. But on a certain light item, on a certain office, if you don't like either candidate, don't vote for either candidate. Vote for all the other stuff on the ballot. Vote for all the initiatives and the local stuff. I don't care what you do with your vote. I will respect your opinion, or I try to. But there are some things that just I'm never going to respect you for. And not only will I not respect you for, but if you insist on telling me water is not wet, the sky is not blue, and down is up with certain candidates, I'm just not going to respect you. If you think Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is fit to be in any elected office, let alone president, you have told me a whole lot about yourself. You are not a serious person. You don't care enough to Google somebody for 5 minutes. You either are ignorant to the kind of person he is, or you don't care, or even worse, you know what he is, and you think that's exactly what the country would need for a high office. You have no ability whatsoever to take 5 minutes on Google or whatever search platform of your choice and understand that the only reason he's running is because he's being funded to run as a spoiler. You probably didn't take the time to realize he's not on enough ballots to win anyway, so no, he is not a valid candidate. He has no chance of winning. There's nothing wrong with saying a candidate has no chance of winning. Now, the babbling class will go, well, of course there's no chance of winning because people like you say he has no chance. He has no chance of winning. I don't like dealing in fantasy. If your candidate has no chance of winning, he has no chance of winning. This is not Ross Perot polling 20-30% and affecting an election. This is JFK Jr., who has horrific stuff in his background, who is directly responsible for people being dead because of his idiotic vaccine takes, who openly, in a court of law, claimed a brain worm as reasons why he shouldn't have to pay up during a divorce settlement. I'm not making this stuff up. The brain worm, by the way, died of malnutrition. Insert your own joke here. Now we have this idiotic story about him and the bear in Central Park. Can I just lay something out for you? And there's probably plenty of Kennedys who are fine folks, but the Kennedy political dynasty does not have a good track record on being good human beings. Old Joe decided that one of his sons was going to be president, and when one of them got blown up in World War II, he switched over to John, so John F. Kennedy became president. Joe was a horrible human being. He had his own daughter lobotomized because he didn't like how she behaved. He did all sorts of bad stuff. He was a Nazi sympathizer. He was a wicked, wicked human being. Now, that doesn't mean all his kids were, but JFK was not a great human being either. He was a philanderer. He had to use prescription drugs and other opioids because by the time that he was shot tragically and killed in office, he was having trouble walking. The reason he looks so weird when he gets shot in those videos is because he had a heavy back brace on, because he was in considerable pain. He may not have even lived through his term. His physical health was so bad and it was covered up. Let's not get into Teddy leaving a woman to drown in a car. But with all that and a whole bunch of other stuff, for the entire Kennedy clan, when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. comes out and runs for president, and the entire Kennedy clan goes, nope, this is where we draw the line. We don't want nothing to do with him. With all of that in their backstory, shouldn't that tell you something? And the fact that Kennedy is just openly opining for, you know, a cabinet or other position with the Trump campaign tells you the whole game of that story. I'm not just picking on, you know, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. here, although he deserves to be mocked out of public life to where we never have to see and or hear his voice ever again. The point is, Twitter isn't real life. Facebook isn't real life. And if you're going to be one of those people who go and just for contrarian's sake, grab the contrarian opinion. And I'm a contrarian at heart. I get it. and go, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is making sense. He is saying what needs to be said. No, you're telling me something about yourself, and it's all bad. Everything you're telling me about yourself, because you're propagating RFK Jr. And you can't just point and laugh and go, no, that's a bad person, a bad human being, and I hope he gets his life together in private life because he has no business being on the public stage. If you can't do that basic thing, I'm not wasting time on it. I'm not arguing with you about it. You've told me everything I need to know. You're not a serious person. You don't care enough about your country and your vote and your fellow countrymen to not propagate nonsense like that. I'm over it. I'm done with it. If you want to take crank candidates like a RFK Jr. and promote them, then you're not worth the time of serious people who are actually trying to use culture and politics and the discourse thereof to try to do a little bit of good. Politics is a big old ungodly mess. It's a whole bunch of crap. It's a bad sandwich everybody's got to eat a little bit in. But maybe we can clean up just a little bit of the mess in our lifetimes if we try real hard and convince people and do the right things. We can make things a little bit better. I don't want to try to sell you on pie in the sky because, no, you can't change everything. You're not going to reverse the national debt. You're not going to change people's apathy. You're not going to change the bureaucratic rot in our country overnight. But if we just kind of start cleaning up our own messes a little at a time, maybe we can make some dents in those big ticket items. We can at least make our families and our homes and our communities and our families a little bit better. And maybe that'll start having a ripple effect. But if you're going to come at me with RFK Jr. and the defense thereof, because it gets you hate, likes, and it gets you traffic, and it gets you attention online for being contrarian, I'm so much smarter than everybody else, I'm going to be contrarian. No. No, you're not worth our time. You're not worth our discourse. RFK Jr. is not worth our time, is not worth our discourse. He needs to go away somewhere. Yes, he has a right to run. I'm not saying that. But I live in the real world where government policies hurt people, where government policies get people killed. And I don't want a wackadoo like that who's amoral and has no center whatsoever anywhere near it. Sorry, if you're a big RFK Jr. fan, you're not going to really be missed in the discourse because you've told us you're not going to bring anything worthwhile to it anyway. That's just the hard truth of it. And sometimes we just need to be honest with ourselves. More Herd Tell right after this. Welcome back to Herd Tell. The politicization of the Olympics, I've left this alone. I was joking on Twitter. It's like, pay close attention to the stories I don't cover. Putting the culture war stuff on sports has bored me to tears. Putting it on the Olympics is even dumber. I'm not going to waste my time on it. However, if we go back to Tokyo, where does Simone Biles go to get her apology? Simone Biles, the greatest gymnast that's ever lived, it's indisputable, was pilloried by the culture warrior grifting class as a quitter, as an embarrassment to the country, as horrible, because in a very dangerous sport, she said, I'm not mentally right. I'm having trouble with this. It's dangerous. I'm not going to compete. I'm going to hurt my team if I continue to compete. And she stepped aside. By the way, we didn't finish dead last. We still performed well as a team because of her decision to step aside. We would have scored much lower if she would have pushed through it and had a massive fall or a fail or something like that. She made indisputably the right decision, not just for her, but for the country and the team and everybody else. No, the grifter class, the culture warriors, the people who are so high on their horse, they see nothing but the tops of the clouds. They pilloried her over and over and over again. Never mind the history of what else was going on in gymnastics back then. We didn't know all the Larry Nassar stuff. We had just started to find out about it at that time. We've now had the trials, the abusive system, the absolute brutality and wickedness of the Carolis and how they treated our gymnasts. That's all came out now. What that generation of gymnasts went through just to compete, the abuse, the system that chewed them up, Let me tell you what the real triumph of Simone Biles at this Olympics was. And I watched every minute of the women's gymnastics with my family because we loved watching it and we were cheering so hard. I got to where I was cheering for Andrade, the Brazilian girl. She had had three ACLs in 4 years. That's not human. You shouldn't be able to function at that level after three ACL surgeries. That's remarkable. What Suni Lee overcame with not one but two chronic illnesses that will affect her for the rest of her life to come back and compete and to medal multiple times. And Simone Biles coming back from all the crap that the talking heads piled at her feet and all the derision. If she would have retired after the last game, she would already be on the Mount Rushmore gymnastics. Now she's undisputably the GOAT. But even then, if she would just call it a day, she was already one of the greatest of all time, and people were treating her like she was garbage, like she was a quitter. It was insane. It was stupid. It was all for clicks and likes and being prisoners of the moment because she didn't do something you wanted her to do, but she made the right call. Go back, go on Peacock or go on YouTube or go wherever you're watching Olympics. I want you to watch the women's competitions, not the performances, which are amazing. Watch the sidelines. Watch how these women are interacting with each other. Two things jump out immediately. Go back and look at what the Olympic teams in the 80s look like. We are sending grown women. I know we have a teenager on the team. I know we have a teenager as the alternate. But these are physically mature, grown women that are competing. These aren't the scared little girls that used to compete all the time who performed well. I'm not denigrating them, but the system was, you know, it was very brutal system that basically wanted you to be that little girl and go perform as a grown woman. Now we just send grown woman to do grown woman things and look what it looks like. There's joy on that sideline. The heft and the weight of the Caroli tyranny and the Larry Nassar stuff and all the abuse. You can see the older headed gymnasts like Simone Biles. It's almost a conscious effort in how much she's building up everybody else. There was that great, if this is a spoiler for you, sorry, you should have watched it by now. When Andrade got the gold and Simone and Jordan Chiles got the silver and bronze respectively in floor exercise, and they did the mocking Saturday Night Wayne's World, we're not worthy thing to her. And it was a great moment for her where they uplifted her, even though she competes for look, these gymnasts, they're all, they know each other. They compete at the internet. These international cycles last months and months and months, and they see them over and over and over again. Look at the camaraderie between the women. And on the men's side too, I've noticed the men's side have changed as well. There's a camaraderie. There's a joy. Yes, there's nerves. But the joy of them competing and the camaraderie is something that you didn't see in the 80s and 90s under the previous regimes. Now go back to the culture warrior grifter class aspect for a second. They don't care about stuff like that. They don't care about the joy of the athlete. They don't care about, are we putting out quality human beings as opposed to just putting out Olympic champions? They don't care that we're sending grown women to do grown women work on a world stage, and what a great culture change that is, and what a great example that is to the next generation. They don't care that the next generation of gymnasts is going to be all the better for the changes that they suffered and fought for. They don't care about any of that because they just want their viral moment of beating up on the girl that failed them. She quit. It's idiocy. Stop being trapped in the moment. Simone Biles created an entire conversation on mental health and athletic performance almost single-handedly because of who she was. And all the hatred that was brought against her showed how right she was about bringing it up. And now, when you watch her just absolutely crush at these games, winning another gold all around, and it wasn't particularly close, she dominated in it. Think about what those naysayers said then, and think about how utterly silent they are now. Well, she bowed down to the Brazilian, and everybody said, shut up, because her actions, not her words, her actions told us what we needed to know. She stepped down when she couldn't do it. She stepped back up when she could and performed. Watch her actions on the sidelines. Over and over and over again in these games, she's uplifting people. She's encouraging people. She is showing joy that a survivor and an overcomer has that most people will never get to experience. And she's using it to make the sport better, her team better, and it represented her country in an amazing way. So all them naysayers in 2020, screw you people. You really missed the boat on that. You didn't tell us a thing about Simone Biles. You told us a whole lot about you. I hope you stay silent henceforth, like you have been the last week and a half of the games, because she shut you up. More Hurt Tell right after this. All right, let's end on a good note and we go back to the Olympics for it, because look, I don't care if they're playing Parcheesi or foot race or an Olympic event or something in the backyard. If you're going to put the flag on and say it's America versus somebody, you better win. America. I think the Olympics, the organization, is a train wreck of scum, hive, and villainy, and it's a big money laundering operation. But anytime the flag is being competed for, I'm all in and you got my support, because we're Americans and we win, because that's what we do. We're winners. We put people on the moon. We win SEC championships and we build Waffle Houses. No other country can say any of that. So this is a great story. I'm going to go to the Washington Post and read it. Candace Buckner, who's an excellent, excellent writer. If you don't follow her, please do. Paris, Washington Post, Candace Buckner. As their way of celebrating U.S. cyclist Kristen Faulkner, the unexpected winner of the women's road race at the Parisian organizers queued up the Beach Boys. Probably because in the annuals of American music, we are woefully lacking in songs about bicycles, so Surfing USA had the success. Only one I can think of course, Queen, and that wouldn't have worked. Back to the piece. Quick thinkers, those race planners. No one in charge of the post-race music could have seen Faulkner coming Sunday. If we are honest, and Faulkner sure was as she accepted her gold, no one thought she could win. For starters, she didn't learn how to clip into her pedals until 7 years ago. Also a first-time Olympian, Faulkner had her mind on the upcoming team pursuits, the track cycling event she believed was the U.S.'s best chance for a medal. Furthermore, Faulkner did not initially qualify for the road race at all. She wasn't even supposed to be here. More than anything else, Americans just don't win this race. It's hadn't since 1984, not the book, when women's individual road racing debuted in the Olympic Games and Connie Carpenter won the first gold. Now, 40 years later, after riding through a city steeped in bicycle culture and beating a European competitors who have grown up on two wheels and American wins in women's cycling. This is a dream come true, Faulkner said. I'm still looking at the finish line sign, wondering how my name got there. So locked in and still pushing her way through the final stretch, Faulkner didn't even raise her hands as she completed the 98-mile course. It's in kilometers, but we don't recognize that because we're winners here in America. We don't use kilometers. Course in 3 hours and 59 minutes and 23 seconds. She has a rule about celebrating too soon. Who knew? A competitor could be on her wheel and then boom. And because Olympic riders did not have the assistance of team radio in their ear, Faulkner wasn't sure how far her three closest competitors were. Had she looked back, though, she would have seen an amazing view, a wall of fans lining the Pont de Lyon, and I'm not pronouncing that right because I am not French, in the shadow of the Eiffel Tower. It was a beautiful scene, and all she would have seen was herself. After riding through Paris up to Versailles, adding even more elevation through four more towns outside the city, then back to Paris to ascend the cobblestones of the Montmartre three times, Faulkner worked together with Belgium's Lotte Kopecky to chase down the two leaders. The quartet rode past the Louvre together, then across the Seine, still bunched together. Then I watched this part live. It blew my mind. With less than by accident, I didn't intend to sit down and watch it. It's like, wait a minute, there's an American winning. Let's watch this. Then with less than 1.2 miles to go, because again, we don't recognize kilometers. Kilometers are for losers. Remaining in the race, Faulkner left the group that included Hungary's Blanca Vos and a Dutch woman considered to be the greatest of her sport, Marianne Vos. That's a V-A-S and a V-O-S. For those of you that my accent is confusing you, I mean no disrespect. The American in Paris, well done, Candace. Good callback. Did look back to ask for directions. If she was going to put her body through all this, spending her Sunday cycling 98.2 miles, then Faulkner wanted to win. Back in May, Taylor Nib won the woman's time trial, but Nib, a rock star of an athlete, surrendered her spot in the road race so she could focus on the time trial as well as the triathlon. And that spot went to Faulkner. and Faulkner won it, a race she wasn't even supposed to be in. I watched that last home stretch. She was in the group, and then she just took off, and we kept going, okay, nobody's going with her. Nobody's going with her. Nobody. Holy crap. And we were watching the counter that shows the distance, and it went from 6 seconds to 19 seconds to 24 seconds to 3 seconds. It just kept climbing. She finished the race, went across the finish line, still accelerating. It was like watching Secretariat. It was amazing. Well done, Faulkner. America win our first road race at the Olympics since 1984. Love it. That's us ending on a good note. That'll do it for Herd Tell. However you're listening or watching, YouTube numbers have been going up. We'd appreciate you if you'd follow and subscribe and leave some comments on the YouTube channel. Those are our Good Talk interviews. We put those on there. The individual segments are also available. The whole show's available on YouTube under their podcast tab if you'd be so inclined to watch it that way or listening that way. And if you want to do the traditional podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker, any TuneIn, any platform you can think of, we be on it. Please leave a comment and rating if they give you the option to do so. And if you would share us on your social media, let people know. Share an episode you like. Share a clip, something you like. We'd sure appreciate it. Make sure you tag it at Herd Tell Show on the twitter.com. You can email us and give us feedback. Got a story idea? Got a topic you want us to cover? We've done whole episodes on things that y'all have asked us to look into. HerdTellShow@gmail.com. I'm at 4 for the Fire on the Twitter, and I cannot wait to get back behind the microphone and do this all again with you in a few days. So, wherever you are, across the street or around the world, we hope you're well. We hope you are well fed, and we can't wait to do more Herd Tell with you. As long as you're listening, we'll keep doing it. Take care. All the music on Herd Tell is provided under a creative content license from MonsterCat.com. Somos la máquina.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now. Save big.